Tommy, Tom Esker. Central Indiana, transmitting to the world. What do you think so far?
Impressive.
What?
Impressive.
Oh, okay, Igor. Hey, Igor is visiting us from the West Coast for a few days. So we wanted to let you know he's still alive and well. And that crazy Arab, what was his name? Hasn't got him yet. So anyhow, Igor is still on the loose. If I go out there to California in the next few weeks, I think I'll look him up. He's still there at the bunker in Fallbrook, California, keeping standing guard over my goodies. Yeah. Insurgent? No, not insurgent. This is White Aryan Resistance again. White Aryan Resistance calling. White Aryan Resistance radio calling. And this is Terrible Tommy, Tom Terrific, right here in the bunker, right here in North Central Indiana, where this is a Tears Day, the last day of September. So if you want to do it in September, if you want to get it done in 2014, you've only got a few hours to do it. So just wanted to remind you, because otherwise you're going to have to wait until the next month, to October. That's right. My gal's getting me all fixed up for the Halloween party. Yeah. She's going to dress me up as a gangster. I don't know how she ever figured something so ridiculous as that up. I got my machine gun. I got my derby hat. I got my spats. You know those things you wear around your legs? Yeah. And I'm ready to go. Right in character, you know. We're at P.O. Box 401 as usual. That's where you send your donations for our projects and so forth. I want to thank the one associate for sending an extra 20 for David Tate, and I'll make sure he gets it. Someone asked me I know who it was, but I'm not going to tell the rest of you. How you get might is right. Well, it's on there. I think you can get it from Amazon or one of those. Well, I've had mine for quite a while, and I think it came from this website, evilnow.com 2003. But I'm sure you can get it on the Amazon or one of those. But you have to look around for the best price. Now, as I recall, there was a paperback put out. In fact, I had a few. The Satanic Bible by Anton LaVey. Now, don't get excited. I'm not an Anton LaVey follower, and I surely don't believe in Satan any more than I do Jehovah. But anyhow, as I recall, he wrote the foreword in it, but the rest of it was all the original Might is Right by Ragnar Redbeard. So if you get one of those books, you can either rip out the Anton LaVey stuff or just disregard it. The rest of it is the straight Ragnar Redbeard. So anyhow, and if I find any other place you can get it any cheaper, you got to watch it. Some of these outfits, even like on Amazon, try to hold you up on books. I checked on Abe Books, which I use quite a bit, abe.com, abe.com, but I don't think they had it. But check again on Amazon, okay? And in the meantime, if I find a low-cost copy for you, I'll get in touch with you, or I'll announce it on the radio show. Now, in a little bit, I'm going to run you an interview with an author of a new book about the Kennedy assassination. Now, don't get excited and say, God almighty, I've heard it a million times, I'm sick of hearing it, because this book seems to be much more important than a lot of the other books were, because there were records dug out that hadn't come out before. But the point is, it's not so much the assassination, but a lot of the other things that are talked about in there, like Carlos Marcellus from New Orleans, who one of my favorite Klan leaders set out to kill. It's ironic, I believe that was before the Kennedy assassination. And isn't it amazing that the FBI stopped him? He was on his way into New Orleans with evidently some dynamite in his car. He was going after Carlos Marcellus. And believe it or not, somehow they let him go. The FBI let him go. But just think how history would have been changed if our Klansman had achieved his goal and wiped out Carlos Marcellus, who was behind the main man behind the assassination. It's interesting how history works. But I can assure you, Lee Harvey Oswald didn't do it. There were three patsies set up in three different cities to possibly do the assassination. One in Tampa, Florida, I believe it was. One in Chicago. And one in Dallas. So they had three planned attempts. If one failed, they'd move to the other. So anyway, I'm going to play that for you a little bit here, and I think it's worth your time, because there's a lot of spinoff on these books that bring up information that are not directly related with the book, but something you'd be interested in. Well, I got a complaint from one of our members here from down in Roanoke. She says Roanoke is controlled by the Taubman family, T-A-U-B-M-A-N, crime family. Roanoke is a third world Jew-licking, inbred, government welfare, rabid, hypocrite, Christian sewer. I'm not from here. This is the trashiest, most communist sewer I've ever been in. I thought I'd already been there, having lived in New Orleans, Riverside, California, and taken a few trips to Mexico. If you keep living, you just keep learning. Signed, a friend. Ha ha ha. Yeah, Well, there's a whole lot of places like that around the country now. Watch your backside and trust yourself above all things. Well, I think we're going to have a visit from our old buddy from California, Clark Kent, who now lives in Ohio. Well, he's lived there a long time. And he's my UFO expert. But beyond that, he's into a lot of other things. And he's just returned from the big, I think it's a national or regional energy fair with big solar wind turbine show. And we're going to want to hear about alternate energy. So I'm going to get him on here in the next few days, hopefully. Well, we got another note here from one of our subscribers. After a year of shortened work hours, I got laid off from work in February in the middle of that nasty winter, which was sort of a mixed blessing as I work outdoors. Work wasn't so slow so much as a large corporation wanted my boss's property, so the corporation known as the City of Detroit gave it to them through some bureaucratic shenanigans. They both like to throw around the phrases, "We're creating jobs," just as Detroit doesn't have a crime problem as much as it has a black problem. America doesn't have an unemployment problem as much as it has a Jew-think employer problem. They don't want you to earn a decent wage unless your job is to hide their crooked assets, or you're in the media lying about the wealth gap and distracting attention away from how non-whites are here solely to maintain that gap. And they have the nerve to say that we are the ones starting class war. Anyway, I'm back at work again, but it will be a while until I have spending money again. Maybe pass the word along to David Tate that I'm one of his sponsors and was unemployed for a while. I didn't forget about his plight. A lot of people like to say or type, quote, "I support the order," unquote. But I try to remember that hot air only supports balloons. Pink slips for the pigs, return ships for the nigs. Anarcho Wolf, Michigan. I thought for the day, rich people's problems can never again be me and my people's problems. I originally thought that all races could benefit from this phrase, but then I remembered that most niggers are so stupid that they think that all whites are rich. Sincerely, Michigan. Okay, I hope you're surviving there in Detroit. So far, you seem to be doing it. This whole deal about the water up there in Detroit gets me. Where the progressives and the liberals are crying that the blacks have to pay water bills. Well, I got news for you. We all pay water bills one way or another. Even though I have my own well, there's electricity involved and so forth, and the cost of originally putting the well down. But when these blacks cry, now if their water bills are exorbitantly high, that's one thing. But if it's a reasonable water bill and they don't pay their water bill, what the hell do you think the city's going to do, and what the city would do to anybody? Shut off your water. So that's a mess. That's a bucket of eels up there in Detroit. But you owes us the water, baby, because we was enslaved. My great-great-great-great-great-great-great-granddaddy was enslaved, man. So you owe us free water. And I noticed the Canadians are coming down across the border being empathetic and bringing water down to give to the niggers. That's sort of funny. Well, if I was there, I'd figure a way of getting water, I'll tell you. If I was, that's one of the problems with these blacks. Down in Africa or any place else, they can sit around with food right just down the road and don't want to go get it, and they complain about walking for water and the whole bit. What the hell do you think white people did for all these centuries without houses and open wells and drinking out of the rivers and wherever we could get it? It's unbelievable. As I've told you many times, we do send out some books to prisoners. And a lot of times they help by sending in so many stamps a month. And also, we get that's part of what we use your money that you send as a donation for, either sending a most postal money or a money order to our close friends that we know and trust, but also other people that that will pay in stamps. And of course, it's usually never going to cover the cost of the book, but at least they're trying. I just sent out Star Rover by Jack London to a young man in the Florida system. Now, the Florida system's a hellhole. I mean, there's a lot of hellholes and prisons around, but Florida really is bad. And that son of a bitch that runs the governor down there, who ripped off the taxpayers for hundreds of millions of dollars in his fraudulent hospital scheme and so forth, and then bought the governorship. And yet now he's making inmates pay for all of the things that they use. And so they got to buy shoes, they got to buy clothes, and the whole bit, and they have almost no money. So whereas many prisons are not good places to be, the Florida system is really bad. Got another little note here that came in. We get quite a few. Just wanted to send you my $20 for this month's subscription or membership or whatever. Couldn't remember what month it was, but I wanted to make sure the money was there. I think you are the best and of the best, and I love your show. Keep up the good work. You and others like you give me inspiration to keep going every day. Stay strong. Keep up the good fight. Watt Power. Okay, now that came from a place in Missouri. And it's the city. The first letter is I. And you didn't send your email address in. Whenever you boys and girls send your donations, whether PayPal or what, make sure your email address is included, because that's the only way I identify you. I don't use home addresses. I don't want any more information unless you want to give it to me, than your email address. So this is Phil. So Phil, email me your email address, or put it on a postcard or something, because that way you make sure you get credit for the show. Well, it's time to take this outtake from another show and send it to you. Now, a lot of times you'll notice it doesn't start right exactly at the beginning. That's because I keep different monitors going all the day long and all night long, and I keep an ear open. If I hear something sounds really interesting, I'll run right over there and punch the button. But sometimes I don't get there to get it in advance, because I don't know that the information is going to be there. So here we go.
I have my old friend and writing partner, Lamar Waldron, in the studio with me today. Hey, Lamar.
Great to be with you again, Tom.
Great to have you join us. You have a new book out. It is Where to Go. It's over here. Oh, did you put that there, Jim, so you can get it out of it? Yeah. Sorry. Okay. It's called The Hidden History of the JFK Assassination by Lamar Waldron, and it describes exactly how Godfather Carlos Marcello had John Kennedy killed, along with the help of Santo Trafficante and others.
And plus, it's really a compendium in many ways of unreleased files that different agencies, especially the Secret Service, but all the big federal agencies, the FBI, CIA, have been keeping secret for 50 years at this point.
Wow. Is there a JFK conference in town this weekend?
There is, in fact, and if people want to know more, they can go to AARC.org, I believe it is. It's the Assassination Archives and Research Center. You may remember 25 years ago, we would come up to Washington and to their old facility with the old hand-operated elevator.
Yep. And what was his name, the guy who was running it?
Well, Jim Lazar.
Yeah.
He's doing this conference. And this has all of the JFK, not all, but pretty much the vast majority of the JFK authors and experts, and even government investigators at one conference.
But Tony Summers going to be here?
Tony Summers is going to be here. G. Robert Blakey, who headed the House Select Committee on Assassinations, who was their chief counsel. And just about every JFK author you can think of wow. is going to be there. You know, but we've really all kind of come together because we all have different conclusions because we've all looked at different information or, you know, not everyone is as crazy as me to spend 25 years, you know, starting out with your help to investigate not just the Secret Service, but also the CIA and Lyndon Johnson and everybody. But, you know, we're kind of all coming together this weekend so that we can focus on getting these darn JFK files released because it's been over 50 years. In fact, this week is the 50th anniversary of the release of the Warren Report.
Right. So these are the files you're talking about are the files that Bill Clinton authorized release of, didn't he?
Well, Congress unanimously passed the JFK Act in 1992, and we have to give credit to Oliver Stone because of the publicity surrounding his JFK film that finally prodded Congress to unanimously, how often does that happen, pass this law, and Ted Kennedy was a big supporter of it as well. He was fine with whatever was going to come out, John Kerry was a big booster of it. And then that was actually passed under Bush, Democratic majority.
In the election year, 92.
Right. But then he waited. He actually rushed out some documents to try to keep Congress from passing that law.
He being Bush?
Bush, who was a former CIA director,
right.
who, while he was CIA director, let's just say a lot of files were withheld from congressional investigations in the 70s. So he kind of pushed some documents, old CIA documents, out in an effort to stem the passage of this law. It didn't work. But those documents that got kind of rushed out real quickly, those were gold mine for you and I.
Yeah.
And then it was left to Bill Clinton to appoint this review board. Many of the agencies, especially the CIA, the Secret Service, and the Office of Naval Intelligence, just stonewalled up a blue streak. They had to actually extend the term of this review board. It was originally supposed to end, I believe, in 97. So many files hadn't been turned over. Extended it to 98. You know, the last day, the last week, suddenly, you know, all these agencies are finding files that they should have been the first files given.
Right.
You know, tape recordings of Carlos Marsal, the Godfather, talking about aspects of the assassination.
This is when the FBI was bugging his through Jack Van Lanningham.
Right, in the mid-80s. Yeah. You know, they sat on that until the very end. You know, the CIA, all of their plans, the plans for a coup in Cuba and the AM World operation, even files naming Commander Juan Almeida, the head of the Cuban Army, who was going to lead that coup for JFK. All these files, you know, right at the end. So then there was another year after the review board ended. Everybody went home. The agencies had an extra year to offer up whatever they felt like.
Mm-hmm.
And to this day, right this very minute, the National Archives will not say how many pages of JFK files or how many hundreds of hours of tapes of people like Carlos Marsal talking about the JFK assassination remain unreleased. They won't even give the figure. Now, those files were all supposed to have been released in the 90s. Anything withheld for national security is supposed to be released in 2017, but we don't know. Are we talking a million pages, which is what NBC said, millions of pages, back in 98? It's ridiculous.
Why are they so wrong?
Two big reasons, and we're going to talk about one today in respect of the Secret Service. They're hiding embarrassing information. Now, you may wonder, why does what someone did 50 years ago impact agencies today? Well, here's why. In those days, you and I have this gray hair because we remember when people would get a job and keep it for 30 years.
Yeah.
I mean, my father, I mean, he...
My dad, too, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, that's what they did. So
40
so,
years.
Yeah, so people who were coming up, who were active in the 60s, I mean, they weren't retiring in many cases until the, you know, till the late 80s, even the early 90s, and their proteges who came up under them, who owe them their loyalty, they're still in position.
You're talking about in institutions like the CIA, the NSA, the Secret Service.
Right, because presidents come and go. The directors of those agencies, they come and go. But it's your, you know, number three, four, five, six guys in those organizations who are there for the career.
Right.
And plus, the other problem is, once you start covering things up, how can you ever reveal it? Secret Service, for instance, in coordination with the CIA and the FBI and Naval Intelligence, withheld that attempt to kill JFK in Tampa, Florida, 4 days before Dallas.
Right. We dug that out.
We looked through thousands of pages of newspaper microfilm.
I remember it well.
You know, and we found one little article that slipped out the day after JFK was killed, And then the very next day, they're like, nobody knew anything.
Right.
But luckily, when I called the Tampa chief of police in the mid-90s, he's like, hey, I've been waiting for this call for 30 years. I thought the Warren Commission, but the Warren Commission, and we'll talk about them in a minute too, they couldn't ask the chief of police in Tampa about the Tampa tip because the Secret Service didn't tell them there had been one 4 days before Dallas. Think how different everything would have been if the general public had known. Now, why was it kept secret at the time? The Kennedys wanted it kept secret, and they had been making plans, and this is in the book, and you and I have talked about this before. For 2 months before JFK's murder, Bobby Kennedy had a secret subcommittee of the National Security Council, and there's actual documentation. You can see some of it in the book, and I'm going to try to post more online soon. Making plans for what to do if an American official was assassinated.
Right. This was their Cuba contingency plan. This was the what if, we keep trying to kill Castro. What if he gets sufficiently PO'd that he takes out our ambassador to Guatemala or something?
And being a perfect example, and as a close aide to one of the Kennedys explained to me, who actually got to read all of the hundreds of pages of the Cuba contingency plans, I can tell you there were at least five agencies involved. They were supposed to make 10 copies of each draft. There were a dozen drafts. One agency released two drafts and one piece of paper. And all the other agencies just hid that this planning ever existed. But you're right.
And this was the plan, by the way, that was invoked when Kennedy was killed, where they nationalized his body, basically mutilated it, and lied to the Warren Commission.
Well, what you have to think of is, again, a close Kennedy aide explained this to me. He said, how would it look? Okay, so we're getting ready to overthrow Fidel Castro. Not an assassination attempt the way they saw it. Not involving the mafia, as the Kennedys,
Right.
The Kennedys.
Oh, this is the real deal, using the number three guy in Cuba,
right,
the head of the army.
The head of the Cuban army, the founder of the Cuban army.
Right.
Much more powerful than Che Guevara. Right. And so, who by the way, only died, I believe, in 2011, I think it was,
yeah,
or 2009.
Very recently.
Very recently. So, again, we get to that. Why so much secrecy is so long.
Lamar, we're hitting a break here. The history of the JFK assassination, shortly be available in paperback, in trade paperback, and the in town for a conference of JFK assassination researchers. And
we should add journalists and historians. People don't realize how many tenured historians are fully behind a conspiracy. I mean, there's Dr. David Kaiser.
Well, Congress was fully behind a conspiracy.
People forget that. I mean, there was a big editorial, I believe, in the New York Times recently, and I need to go back and read it in depth, but when I skimmed it, it was making it sound like, it's kind of new to believe in a conspiracy, but there were at least five investigations into the assassination that followed the Warren Commission. And the most recent congressional investigation did conclude in 1979 that JFK was definitely, they used the term because they're Congress, likely killed by a conspiracy, and that Carlos Marcello, godfather of Louisiana and Texas, and Santo Trafficante, the godfather of Tampa and the father of the French Connection heroin network, had the, quote, motive, means, and opportunity to kill JFK. They couldn't, and they did refer it for prosecution to the Justice Department and the FBI, but they couldn't be more definitive, and they didn't know about the role of Johnny Roselli, the associate of Marcello and Trafficante, because Trafficante had him killed shortly before the House Select Committee was formed.
And dismembered and stuffed into a 56-gallon
So much
barrel.
Was withheld from them by, like, the Tampa attempt, like these Cuba contingency plans, an attempt to kill JFK in Chicago 3 weeks before Dallas, the fact that Lee Harvey Oswald was under tight surveillance by naval intelligence the entire time he was back in the United States after his so-called defection to the Soviet Union. So much was withheld, and the Secret Service, because they've been in the news recently, they're just the worst example. There were other things that the Warren Commission never fully found out about. People have heard since we recently had the intruder who got in.
Right, and you've got right-wingers all over America because the president is a Democrat saying, oh, my God, the Secret Service has fallen apart. It must be because of the president.
Right, right. But these things have been going on for ages. You may remember there have been three horrible drinking incidents, one in the Netherlands. And this is JFK's, President Obama. He's getting confused. security detail.
Right.
You know, drinking incidents in the Netherlands, the drinking and the prostitution thing in Colombia, and then down in Miami. And then, you know, there's been this huge ongoing lawsuit with racism and noose and just horrible problems. Well, go back to 1963. They had horrible problems with racism back then.
There were Abraham Bolden on this program, the former Secret Service agent, first black Secret Service agent to serve in the presidential detail.
Exactly right.
Laid all this stuff out.
Right. He had to leave the presidential detail because his superiors wouldn't act on the racism.
Yeah.
And then he also noticed incredibly heavy drinking, you know, within hours of needing to protect the president. What was originally hidden from the Warren Commission, and then they found out a little, was that 10 Secret Service agents were out drinking until between 3 and 5 a.m. the morning, like literally, you know, hours, 7 hours before the bullets flew, in a sleazy club in Fort Worth owned by a buddy of Jack Ruby's. And reportedly, some of the agents were drinking, you know, pure Everclear alcohol. That's what the bar owner said. It's actually a coffee shop, so they had to secretly serve the liquor. And that was originally hidden from the Warren Commission. They eventually found out a little about it. So we simply see these problems today, even the presidential protection problems. You know, I mean, the thing with you know, the recent thing is nothing compared to what happened in Chicago, where they were shadowing four men, the Secret Service was. Well, they heard four men were going to try to kill JFK. They were shadowing two of them. One of the agents blew the surveillance. They got away. The only person who wound up getting arrested in Chicago was an ex-military guy who apparently was the fall guy who worked in a warehouse overlooking the motorcade route, had arms and ammo and stuff in his car. But they didn't even charge him with that because they were supposed to keep this attempt secret. So they charged him with having, I think it was some sort of a bladed weapon in his front seat, which does, again, ring bells with that recent attempt at the White House, because that guy had a knife, and then when they searched his car, he had, I believe, 800 rounds of ammunition.
Right.
So those
the knife was apparently a pocket knife.
Right. It was, I think,
that he always carried with him.
Yeah. The ammo is a little more troubling.
Yeah.
But again, he was a troubled ex-serviceman, and I'm sure, he had PTSD, so I'm not putting anything on him at all. But again, if we go back to Chicago, the real assassins got away because the Secret Service blew the surveillance, and only the guy who was apparently intended to be the Chicago Patsy.
The Chicago Oswald.
Right, the Chicago Oswald. And by the way, there was a Tampa Oswald,
right.
A guy, a Cuban exile. And the guy in Chicago had a dozen parallels to Oswald. The guy in Tampa had two dozen parallels
to Oswald. For example, parallels.
Well, the one in Tampa, for instance, he hung out with the Fair Play for Cuba committee. Some of his friends thought he was pro-Castro. Others thought he was anti-Castro. He actually got into what some people think was a staged fist fight. He moved away from his wife at the same time Oswald moved away from his wife. He went to the Tampa Oswald, Gilberto Policarpo Lopez, actually then went to Dallas after Trafficante called off the Tampa attempt because authorities had found out about it. So, and they're about the same age, even about the same physical description. In fact, the description for the assailant that was being sought in Tampa while JFK was going ahead with his motorcade, if he had to, because he was going to give a speech that night in Miami with a few lines written specifically to reassure Commander Almeida that, yes, in 2 weeks you should go ahead with that coup. So JFK couldn't, even though this was the second threat, you know, in 2.5 weeks, he couldn't call it off. He had to go through with it. The description issued in Tampa for the unknown assailant who was going to shoot JFK from a tall building matches Oswald. It matches Gilberto Lopez very well, but it matches Oswald better than the first description put out in Dallas. So again, there weren't three different plans. Now, there was one plan
to kill the still president, Kennedy,
in three different cities
over a 2 or 3 week period.
Right, and three different patsies who have remarkable similarities between them. So if Oswald had been hit by a truck the day before,
then they would have excluded Lopez.
He was already in.
So the plan was triply redundant, and then doubly redundant within the triple redundancy. The Hidden History of the JFK Assassination, his new book on the Oswald. On the Kennedy assassination.
Right, yeah. I mean, see, and again, that's actually great, great wording to use because, yeah, Lee Harvey Oswald was assassinated by somebody working for Carlos Marcello and Santo Trafficante, an actual personal socialism, just as JFK was.
And arguably Jack Ruby was assassinated, too, by Texas refusing to let him out of the Texas jails. He was begging. He was to J. Edgar Hoover. He was saying, I'll tell you stuff if you get me out of the state.
Right, and then he has a physical, and clear to go. His conviction, he's granted a new trial because, it was pretty biased to try him in Dallas, where he fronted a sleazy strip club for Marcello's organization.
Right.
And then within a week or so of that court decision, saying, oh, you've got to move him from his cell reportedly overlooking Dealey Plaza. I haven't confirmed that, but it's been reported his cell overlooked Dealey Plaza. What a reminder to keep your mouth shut. And within a week of that, having a perfect physical, he comes down with cancer and dies. He can be moved to, I think it was Wichita Falls, for his new trial.
Amazing, amazing. We've got a bunch of questions for people from people here. One point. I just went over and I was the second signature in the petition. Lamar's was the first. If you go to the hidden history of the JFK assassination.com, yes, it has the thes and the ofs and the hidden history of the JFK assassination. And there's four S's in assassination. A-double-S. A-double-S.
You're better spelled.
I-N-A-T-I-O-N. Oh, I'm looking at the back of the book. If you go to that website, you can sign this petition to release these files and also to pardon Abraham Bolden, who has been on this program and you and I have both written about.
Who was framed by the mafia when he came to Washington to tell the Warren Commission staff about the Chicago attempt, about the Tampa,
right, and then he
about
ended up
the excessive
jail.
Drinking, and these mob operatives framed him, and his main accuser later admitted under oath, he committed perjury,
yeah.
And Bolden's judge told the jury Bolden was guilty.
Amazing
stuff. So if you want to get all the files released while you're still alive. Because
right.
The DA says they might not release in 2017. The pardon folder, go to the hidden history of the JFK assassination.com. That'll have a link to this White House petition. Right now, we have two signatures, mine and Tom's. We need to get a total of 100,000.
Right, to get the White House to respond.
Official White House response. And then two more things, too, Tom. I'm going to be working with your people about getting a tweet out about that.
Yeah, we'll tweet it out as soon as we get off the air.
And if people. Because we're just who we are, okay? We don't have the big publicity machines that the right wing has. But if people will retweet your tweet and ask their friends to do it, ask their friends to sign that petition, maybe we can get this going. There's also on the hidden history of the JFK assassination.com. I just kind of restarted my Facebook page. So the same thing there. Go there, share that. It's got information about Bolden, about the files, and. Social media is probably the only way we're going to have any chance to really get the White House's attention. And so, because the White House should just order, these agencies to comply with that 1992 law.
All it would take is an executive order. Channing in Indianapolis, Indiana, you have a question for Lamar. Channing?
Yeah.
Hey,
hello?
You're on the air.
Hi, good afternoon. I want to believe in the conspiracy theory. I do. I've read, watched Oliver Stone stuff, and I'm seeing my PBS Frontline about it. The thing that I can't understand though is if there's a conspiracy, they would have had to have arranged Oswald's employment at the school book depository, and I don't see how that could have been done given the facts. Could you maybe go into that a little bit?
Well, sure. Because if you look at the facts real closely, not it's just Oswald in isolation. But Oswald, in terms of these other two patsies in Chicago and Tampa, at the same time Oswald, he made that very mysterious to many people trip to Mexico City, which I fully explain in the book. Then he comes back to Dallas. He does not move in with his wife and his child. He goes to a rooming house. Well, first he stays at a YMCA. He starts looking for these jobs. Well, at the very minute he's checking into a YMCA in Dallas in Chicago, that the ex-Marine in Chicago Valley is also checking into a YMCA, also looking for jobs. And guess what? Both Oswald and Valley both wind up with jobs at warehouses overlooking, really, really well overlooking JFK's motorcade route in places where the motorcade would have to slow down a great deal. So in other words, the motorcade, both in Valley's case and in Oswald's case, it's not like they're going 40 miles an hour. You're having to almost come to a complete stop. So when you look at it in that context, and I do have a lot of other information in the book that explains Oswald, you know, the job and his activity.
So who helped Oswald get this job in this place where he could be accused of assassinating the president?
Basically, there are six different witnesses that saw Oswald with, and most of them say he was working for, a guy in New Orleans by the name of Guy Bannister, the ex-FBI chief of Chicago, who was a heavy drinker, white supremacist, you know, ultra anti-communist kind of guy. He also and Oswald was working for Bannister in the summer of 63. Bannister also did a lot of work for naval intelligence and some for the CIA as well. So Oswald was never, I hate to say it, a genuine member of the far left. Ask yourself this. How many teenage communists, that's what the Warren Commission said Oswald was, a teenage communist from the time he was a teenager, how many teenage communists not only joined the Civil Air Patrol, not only joined the United States Marines in the McCarthy 50s, but tried to join the United States Marines a year before they're old enough, and then when he's in the Marines, he goes around spouting a love. And this is the McCarthy 50s, you know, people are getting blacklisted, committing suicide, you're being sent to prison, being kept political prisoners. Oswald's going around the Marine base, you know, not a bunch of softies there, especially these Marine drill sergeants, spouting a love of Russia and Russian so much, supposedly teaching himself to speak Russian, a very difficult language, so much that his fellow Marine buddies call him Oswaldskovich. Guess how many times Oswald was ever attacked by his fellow Marines for that, was written up, was disciplined? Zero. So
well,
in other words, Oswald...
Well, and he ended up in Japan at Natsuki Air Force Base.
Secret U-2 base in Japan.
Where he was learning Russian, and from there he defects to the Soviet Union.
Well, he actually learned Russian, I think it was... Monterey Language Institute in California. But yeah, he was actually doing intelligence work in Tokyo. Oswald didn't, you know, finish high school, 120 IQ, but learning disabilities. You know, he's going to this bar, and we all kind of generally know what Japanese bars are like, and you have these hostesses. Cost a lot of money. The queen bee, the top, most beautiful, most expensive hostess at this one bar, does she hang out with the officers there? You know, the enlisted men who have money? No, she hangs out with Oswald. Again, we know from his fellow Marines, he was already working for naval intelligence at that time.
And so, everybody knew it. And yeah, they realized that his I Love Russia was a front.
Right, it was a front. That's why his fellow Marines didn't beat him up. One of his own fellow Marines, you and I tried to track down this guy, thought Oswald was so strange that before the assassination, this guy, Cary Thornley, wrote a book about Oswald because this guy was so bizarre.
Yeah.
So basically, Oswald
Guy Bannister
working,
helps Oswald
well,
get
well,
the
well, I, Guy Bannister is working for U.S. intelligence, naval intelligence, CIA, and
now they don't want Oswald on the assassination route. It's the mafia who wants him on the assassination.
Right. There, Oswald thinks he's going to get another assignment. You know, he did. He was one of six young men around the same age that went to Russia around the same time on these 20 defections. Five came back around the same time with Russian wives. We wanted to see the United States government, how the KGB would then try to keep contact with Oswald or his wife.
Right.
So he was under tight naval surveillance. Handling that tight surveillance was, in New Orleans, was Guy Bannister and Guy Bannister's associate, the former Eastern Airlines pilot by the name of David Ferry, also rabid anti-communist, also a former CIA
agent. And
as well.
David Ferry was the pilot for Carlos Marcello.
And Guy Bannister was the private detective for Carlos Marcello. So U.S. intelligence in Washington, they're looking at this distinguished guy, Guy Bannister, former FBI chief of Chicago, you know, does good work for the CIA and FBI, as...
Put him in charge of handling Oswald. And he's actually working for Marcello, who is trying to position Oswald to take the fall for a hit that Marcello is
right. So I'm totally certain Oswald was told to get a job in Dallas in some sort of a warehouse, and he was told the general area to do this in... But again, it's, you know, he's one of several people doing these same things at the same time.
Yeah, that's amazing. That's amazing. We have less than a minute before we're going to hit a break, right? Because we've got a bunch of calls, a bunch of questions. One of these is a question about the role of Robert Kennedy going after the mob.
Oh, very important. Robert, basically, John Robert Kennedy led the biggest war against organized crime America had ever seen to that point, and really has ever seen. I mean, it was enormous. But as the mob had the run of not just the United States, but also Cuba in the 50s under Vice President Nixon, who who was in bed with the mafia from his very first race for Congress when Mickey Cohen, the Los Angeles mobster, you know, gave money. I mean, so Nixon was in the mafia's pocket.
He was the vice president, and J. Edgar Hoover was being blackmailed by the mafia.
Right, right.
Tony Summers so brilliantly
lit
up.
It was literally up to Senator John F. Kennedy. He used these labor hearings to go after Jimmy Hoffa and his mafia allies because the government really wasn't doing it.
The Petipovers?
No, that was earlier. This was the McClellan.
McClellan.
But it was JFK and Bobby's show all the way.
Amazing. Lamar Waldron with us.
Normally, I'm not a Tom Harmon fan. He's a progressive liberal. And obviously, you know what he thinks about racists. But sometimes there's something, or a guest comes on the show that is quite interesting. One of his biggest failings is, you know, he's on Russia TV too, which is interesting. But one of his biggest failings is he interrupts his guests all the time, or people who call in. He walks all over them and talks all over them, and it makes it to where I don't like to listen even when he's got something good on. But he's a typical progressive liberal, but like I say, sometimes you can dig out things. Now, of course, ignore all the bullshit about racists, and that has nothing to do with it anyhow, whether they were racists or white supremacists or not. that didn't make any sense at all. But, of course, that's the way progressive liberals are trained to think, and they're going to throw it in there every time they get a chance. And, of course, the right-wingers do the same thing. Oh, he's a leftist. Don't listen to anything he says. You know, stuff like that. He must be a communist. So both sides do it. So anyhow, I thought that was interesting. You might want to get the book. And like I say, having lived through that time, I wish that our Klan leader in the South would have reached his objective of blowing the shit out of Carlos Marcellus. And I didn't get the name out here of that particular Klansman before he ended up doing time and dying in prison in the 80s, I believe. Well, I was looking around my library, and I got it all replaced, but I don't have it reformulated so that I don't have all the Klan books together and different books separated, so... But anyhow, there is a very good book in my library, and it's by Jack Nelson, who used to work for the Los Angeles Times. He wrote a reasonably fair book that brought out a lot of information. Now, he's not on our side, of course, but it's called Terror in the Night, The Klan's Campaign Against the Jews. And you might want to get a hold of this for a lot of history. They even mention us in the book. White Aryan Resistance. I know that the person's name who I've been trying to rack my brain to remember, it'll come back to me, or I'll find it and maybe tell you tomorrow or sometime about it. But anyhow, somewhere I read where he was stopped going into New Orleans with some dynamite in the trunk or in the back seat on the floor or something, going after Carlos Marcellus. What a guy. Yeah. Well, goody, goody. The name came to me out of the blue while I was looking for other books that might have it in it. His name was Byron De La Beckwith. And a few years ago, you'll probably remember, they revived charges against him and slapped him in prison, and he died there, I believe. Yeah. See, the South fought back all wrong. If they could have possibly won, they would have had to won. Fight a not only political but physical guerrilla warfare like they should have done towards the end of the Civil War, and they could have changed history and eventually won like the Vietnamese. You know, but instead of going for the throat, they too many times, in fact almost every case, they went for the bottom of the ladder. Whether it was some blacks around and, you know, put them in a dam down there or something like that, or some other, you know, low-ball street-level type fighting. If they'd have gone after the sons of bitches that were selling them out, which many of them, people who were selling them out, were pretending to be with them, like most of the governors down in the South. They were pretending to be racist and racial separatists, but in reality they were not. They were just treading water until the federal government could change things and they could retain their power, which most of them didn't. So anyhow, that's the problem. When all the feds came in and started buying informants and so forth, well, instead of going after the informants, they should have gone after the feds. But anyhow, you can't, if you're going to have guerrilla warfare or revolution, you can't start at the bottom. You can try, but it's a long way up. You got to start at the top. If you're not going to start pretty close to the top, then you might as well not start at all. You know, I get involved with what I'm talking about, and sometimes I press the wrong button. I've done it twice this week, or I guess it was once last week, and now once this week. So that was almost the end of the show, but I accidentally cut it off. So I'll put this end on here, and you'll have to understand we're a low-budget operator here, and we've got a hee-haw operation. So that's it. 14.5, and shut your pie hole.